Accession number 17965, Sergeant Major Frederick Beadle, Reel 8.
Sergeant Major Beadle, Reel 8. You were saying that soldiers who'd been involved in any incidents would be sent to the company commander.
Quite. The company commander could only award a certain amount of punishment. If it was a more severe incident, then he would pass them on to the regimental commander, where they would get whatever punishment he decreed, whether it be defaulters or whether it be imprisonment. But he was able to, for instance, imprison them for 14 days.
What happened to defaulters?
Defaulters?
Yes.
Defaulters, they would, depending on how many days defaulters they were given,
yes,
for that so many days, they would report to the guardroom at all the times laid down, which were odd times during the day, and during the evening, every half hour or so, and they would answer the bugle call. There was a bugler on guard with the guards, of the battalion, and he would sound defaulters at these times, at which time the defaulters would form up outside the guard room, be checked by the guard commander, then dismissed. Whereas in the afternoons, most troops, it was in bed or out of barracks, defaulters would be given a job to do.
What sort of job?
Any old odd job that was going in the battalion, they would do it. Digging or what have you, really. Some of the jobs were a waste of time. They'd dig a hole one day and fill it in the next, which was supposed to be funny, but I didn't think that was very funny.
Who decided on what they would have to do?
The provost corporal or provost sergeant. They would decide what they would do. They had to occupy them. Then, of course, they had their pack drill to do every evening from 6 to half past. That pack drill carried on for a long time.
What was pack drill?
Valises of a soldier came in two sizes in those days. You had a pack and a haversack. In the haversack was a small webbing container in which you put your daily necessities when you were going into battle. A spare pair of socks, knife, fork, spoon, razor, comb, lather brush, toothbrush, button stick, button brush, all those sorts of things. On the frontier, we also carried in there a pair of chaplies. A chaplie is a saddle-type shoe which had a good thick sole and was studded the same as the ammunition boot in those days. Now, on the other hand, the pack was a large webbing container in which you put even more kit. So you had this large pack on your back. You had your haversack on your right-hand side and attached to a webbing belt. On your left-hand side, you had a water bottle filled with water and a bayonet, and then you did a half-hour drill with that weight on your back.
Who would actually take that drill?
The provost sergeant or the provost corporal, whichever one decided it was decided should do it.
And what happened to those who were jailed, who were imprisoned?
That's a very good question too, because I don't really know. I don't think there's an answer to that. Everywhere they went, they had to double. any odd jobs that were going, they would have to do it. But they would be very much the same as the Forters, really. The only difference being that they didn't have to report to the guard room. They were already there, imprisoned there, because of the prison cages were in the guard rooms in every case.
What was the sort of rate of offences, as far as you were concerned? Did you have soldiers involved in incidents every night, or once or twice a week? Or,
oh, no.
Well, roughly how often you had to arrest somebody, or your patrols had to pick somebody up?
Well, I was a garrison parole corporal for about 5 months, I suppose. I cut it short because I came home on leave for 6 months. And in that time, I only had calls to charge 2 people.
In 5 months?
In 5 months. And their crime wasn't really a crime. There were some certain prostitutes who were selling their wares, and they were doing it from a horse and cart. Orders were given that troops should not use these types of transport. And on one occasion, I was with two of my policemen at the time, and this Gary passed us, a Gary being a horse and cart, and there was distinct swear words in loud voices from inside, which were obviously soldiers. We stopped the car and took them out, the two of them there with two ladies. We duly charged them for disobeying orders.
Do you remember what they got as a punishment?
Can't remember. Yeah. Don't think they got much anyway.
Would you like a drink?
That, you know, you had to patrol drinking areas and brothel areas. Were these two areas separate, or were they integrated? Was there an area with mixture of brothels and
bars? I
think
the answer to that, there was a little bit of both in each area. Where there's women concerned, the certain chaps will be there.
Did the battalion have a policy of trying to discourage visits to the red light quarter?
Did they?
Did the battalion have a policy of trying to discourage visits to the red light quarter, or was it considered something inevitable or normal?
Most actual red lamp areas were out of bounds. Particularly in larger towns such as Calcutta, there's certain areas there where they were just block areas. They were nothing more than big blocks of what's the name for it?
Brothels.
That was about it, really.
It sounds like you had a very quiet time as garrison provo.
Oh, I did. I think we did. Yes. As I've said, I only had calls to charge 2 people in that time. Mind you, we used to keep the known pimps away from where the troops were mainly gathered.
How did you do that?
We told them to go, and if they didn't, we made them. I won't say any more about it than that.
Are you saying that you came home on leave after being Provost Corporal for 5 months?
Yes.
What did you do when you came home on leave?
I just rested and had a good time. No, it was... The situation in those days in India was you couldn't come home until you'd done 6 years in the country. When you'd done your 6 years, then your passage was paid home. You had 6 months' leave. Passage was paid to go back again. And you had your pay sent from Indian office at Whitehall. You were completely free of the army in those days. As far as I was concerned, if you would like a personal opinion about it, it was far too long. I was a very keen NCO, in my own opinion, of course, in the days before going on leave. I think that keenness would be justified in as much as I was garrison provost corporal at that time. But after 6 months, having nothing whatsoever to do with the army, and going back again, I found that a bit hard to put up with.
You got out of the military habit of life.
That's right. It's like starting all over again. Plus the fact that for the first time in life I had met a lady who was I favoured very much. So missed her going back. It was a wrong step, really. And it took me a long time to readjust myself. And I would think most chaps who did 6 months leave might have the same sort of feeling about it. I don't know.
Had you contemplated marriage to this lady?
Not at not straight away or in the near distance, but possibly in time.
There's an idea at the back of your mind, then.
Oh yes, I did.
Did you manage to keep in touch with her once you'd gone
back?
Oh
yes, I did. Yes, yes. And I eventually married her in 1939 when I came home. But the marriage didn't last.
Was the army to blame for that, do you think?
I wouldn't say anybody was to blame for it. Let's just say the war.
So you went back to India, and the battalion had moved to Lahore when you got back.
That's right, yes. Oh, no, wait a minute.
Because you came
It hadn't moved.
It hadn't moved.
No. No, it was still in Dinapore when I came back. And we did go on to Lahore until 1938, I suppose. Oh. It was 37. No, 1937.
So you were back in England in 1936 on your leave.
1936, yes. Yes. We got a little longer time on our leave because at that time, the back end of 1936, if you remember, there was a lot of trouble in the Middle East.
Yes.
And the troop transport, sea transport that is, was being used to take troops there rather than taking them back to India.
I was about to say that while you'd been away in India, things had been developing in Europe. There'd been the emergence of a new government in Germany, and the Italians had been pressing claims in East Africa and in the Mediterranean. Were you aware of a change in the political atmosphere when you were back home on leave?
No, not at all.
Do you recollect if you got a notion that there might be another world war in Europe when you were home?
No, not at all. Not far from it. I think most people, if they were honest, and were in England at that time, they would say the same. We were aware that the Germans were pinching a bit of land here and pinching a bit of land there. But I don't think anybody was really worried about it at that time. I certainly wasn't.
So back to Dinapore, and you carried on in Dinapore. Did you resume as provost corporal when you got back to Dinapore?
No, I went to what we used to call it going back to duty.
Yes.
When you went to a company. I just went back to a duty with the B Company and very quickly set sail for the Andaman Islands to do our 3 months stint there.
What were you doing in the Andaman Islands?
We were there for protection. It was a special name for it, where they sent convicts.
Penal colony.
That's right, a penal colony on Aberdeen Island they were on, and There was a governor there, the government house. We were there for protection. We did very little, to be quite honest, as far as soldiers were concerned. We just did the normal things that one did anywhere else. A bit of drill here, a bit of rifle drill there, a bit of saluting somewhere else.
Did you see anything of the convicts?
Oh, yes, they were walking about free on Andaman Islands. What was the name of the island we were on? I can't remember. My memory's bad for names these days. But we were on a small island which was free of convicts. This is the governor was on this particular island, and there was a ferry from our island to Aberdeen Island, where most of the convicts were. And on Aberdeen Island, we had our sports grounds, because there wasn't enough room on the island where we were barracked. It was a very pleasant few months, except the humidity there was very, very bad. And one felt a bit down in the dumps most of the time, I suppose is the best way to describe it. But from a scenery point of view, it was a lovely place. I mean, as you approached it, it was what you dreamed of, what you thought of as a dream island, with the palms and the sand and everything else. It was by sight good. Otherwise, a bit stinted.
Was there of any disturbance or trouble while you were on the Andamans?
No, not at all. We were a trouble-free battalion, I think.
But, I mean, presumably you were there to act as a force if the convicts should be.
Absolutely, yes. Their security is the answer, really.
Yes.
Yeah.
But there was no trouble with them?
Not at all.
Did you ever have occasion to speak to any of them about what they were there for?
No. There was no way, really, of mixing with them. As they were on one island and we were on another island. The only reason we had to go to their island was to play sport. We had our football pitch, their hockey pitch and what have you, over there, close to where the ferry went in. You literally walked off the boat, more or less onto the playing fields.
You were saying it was very humid there. Did you suffer any health difficulties as a result of that?
Oh, no. Well, one gets prickly heat and things like that in those sort of climates. That's something you expect.
Was there any opportunity for military training as such while you were there?
For everyday military training, yes. I mean, one could do instructions on rifle, Lewis gun, or drilling, all that sort of thing. But when it came to tactics, of course, you'd be stinted. There wasn't room on the islands to spread out all that much. And we never did do anything on the Aberdeen Island where the prisoners were. It was a bit stinted, I suppose, but with a bit of ingenuity, there's always something you can do, isn't there?
So you had five months on the island, you said, and then what happened? You went back to
HQ.
Yes.
Back to Dinapore. Then you might stay there for a bit, or you might be sent on to Muzaffarpur.
What was it in Muzaffarpur?
Well, there was nothing military there as far as I knew. If there was, that I wasn't told anything about it. It was a railway centre. It had a good polo field.
Perhaps that was why you were sent there.
Which was right, all right for the officers. It's quite a big town, and in that part of the world, they're a bit more bolshy than a lot of other places in India. Patna, you were always reading about with problems there.
How was this bolshiness shown? What were the manifestations?
Well, it didn't show while we were there in actual aspect, but if there is any trouble going, you'll nearly always find Patna mentioned, or one of the towns in the close proximity of Patna. They just seem to be an area where they're a bit on the Bolshie side. And I think they've still been the same since India had their own rule anyway.
Did you have any idea what these disturbances were about when you heard about them?
No, not really. I think they were general things in life that they were, again, it was among themselves that they were squabbling. It wasn't anything to do with us. I mean, we haven't been there now for how many years?
About 50.
About 50 years now. But they're still having a go at one another. So it certainly wasn't just because of us as soldiers in their area.
So you've been out to Muzaffarabad. How long would you go out for to an outstation like that?
Usually it was 6 months at a time, because up on the frontier, up in the hill stations, you see, you'd be up there for 6 months, keeping the thing. They'd go from March to from about March round to September. And to share it out, so there wasn't too many people sticking the hot summer on the plains, they would divide that 6 months up to, say, 3 months, so that you'd go up there for 3 months, come down, and somebody, another company would take your place up there. So usually headquarters is in the hills too. Everybody got a fair whack of the thing.
Was there anything you could do to mitigate the effects of the heat when you were down on the plains in the summer?
Oh, no, it's like everything else, you get used to it. The only thing I can think of that was part of orders as far as the heat was concerned was that you would wear a topi between sun-up and sundown. If you was caught out without a topi on, you would be put on a charge. Once upon a time, they used to wear spine pads as well, but they'd recently been discarded when I got out there.
Did you have any case of soldiers suffering from heat stroke as a result of the temperature?
No. To the best of my memory, no.
When you moved from Dinapur and the area around it, how did you actually make the journey?
But when we moved from Dinapur to Lahore,
yes,
we did it by train.
Did the battalion all go in one body?
Yes, all in one. The usual advance party would have been gone before the main body went, but we did it by train. It was a funny journey for us, because it was a journey of 3 or 4 days. I can't remember exactly how long it took. But what we did was we went by train from Lahore to Lucknow, and we pulled in a siding there. We had to change our drill and that, and posh ourselves up. We marched to the my memory again. Lucknow was a place where there was a battle of the Indian Mutiny, if you remember, and I can't remember the name of the site.
The residency.
We marched the residency and was there, given the worn out Union Jack that had flown over it, and then we went back to the train. And settled down and went on to Lahore. Now that flag, if you're in Bodmin, you'll find it in the museum there. Yes, by train.
Was it a comfortable journey or not?
Depends on your point of view, I suppose. the train transport for troops. The carriages were open right the way down, and you could either seat three or lay one on a seat bed, a middle of the road bed, and a top bed. And in each compartment that you walked down was six. So you had blankets laid out on the slatted woodwork. And that is where you more or less lived. You sat down, you could drop the middle bed down so that you could sit on the lower one and use the middle one as a backrest by day. And then by night you pulled that up and you all laid down. It was comfortable enough, I suppose. Bit hard to lay on, but otherwise it was all right.
How did they arrange the feeding?
Oh, that was simply done, really. It was organised through the battalion to stop at certain places which were able to accommodate the battalion forming up and feeding, and which were within reach of cooks and rations, etc., etc. So, for instance, if we'd stopped for a meal at Lucknow, we would have phoned on in advance, and they would be waiting there with the meal for us. You'd just get out the train, form up, get your meal, and back in the train again.
What happened when you got to Lahore?
Well, we just settled down like any other battalion. There again, we were split up a bit. We had one company stationed in the town of Lahore proper, and the rest of the battalion was out in the cantonment, the military cantonment.
How far away from the town was the cantonment?
3 miles, thereabouts. Again, it was a case most folks got bicycles if they could afford them.
What, so they could cycle into town?
That's right, yeah. Yeah.
What did the town have to offer?
Oh, the usual things. Dance halls or whatever, but not a lot of them, and not very desirable sort of places anyway. But they had a very good railway club there, and sergeants and above had an open invitation to it. Otherwise it was just another station, really.
Was there any change in the sort of military activity you were engaging in?
No, not at all. Still carried on the same old way as we carried on on innumerable occasions.
What about the atmosphere in Lahore? Because you've been saying that Patna and that area had a reputation for being troublesome.
We had no trouble during the period I was there. I think we were made quite welcome, really. But as you say, it could be a troublesome area, and it was a troublesome area at times. And that was obviously why they had one company actually in the town itself. So they were really on the spot if anything went wrong.
Was the company in the town in the same sort of accommodation as you were in out in the cantonment?
Oh, yes.
It was sort of a barracks.
That's right, yeah. Just straightforward barracks. As you can imagine, all the barrack rooms that out there had verandas because that keeps the heat back a bit. But wherever we went, it was the same anyway. Some places had a double-decker barrack rooms, but most of them were single-decker barrack rooms with very high ceilings and verandas, again, to keep the heat back. Just the same.
Now, at this stage, I think you were beginning to draw towards the end of your engagement, weren't you? You were getting towards the end of your term of engagement.
I was, yes. Yes, that was... I finished my engagement on my birthday in 1939. I should have finished. But I came home to do a course of sheet metal working.
Yes.
Which I did in Wadden, which is situated, it backed onto Croydon Aerodrome. And so I came home in 1939 in about March and was then forwarded onto the Government Training Centre in Wadden and was given civilian billets at the time.